We will be back.
It's something that you feel right in your guts. Those workers just keep standing up and standing up.
3CR, the voice of struggle. 8:55 on the AM band.
Yes, indeed. We are 3CR, standing up for workers' rights. It's May Day. Happy May Day, everyone. My name's James McKenzie, here till 9:30, but we have an awesome morning of May Day programming here on 3CR, taking us through till noon. Alrighty, let's get into our first interview. Alex White is the Secretary of Unions ACT, and he's an environmental blogger, and he joins us on the line. Welcome, Alex.
Happy May Day.
Happy May Day, Alex. What can we expect from Unions ACT today?
Well, today we're kicking off our rally to change the rules as part of the 12 days of national action. We're really excited. We think it's going to be a big rally today in Canberra, one of the bigger ones. It's a very genteel town, as you can imagine, a public service town, but we think that people are really fired up, angry about 70-year inequality, about the lies of trickle-down economics, and they know that the only way that we're going to overturn and stop excessive corporate power is to take to the streets to rally to change the rules.
Which rules in particular need changing? I mean, there must be so many.
Well, that's right. There's a lot of rules that need to be changed. We've obviously got broken tax laws. We can see every day there's more and more banking scandals. But the rules that we're really focused on are the broken workplace laws, the so-called Fair Work Act. And a lot of your listeners would know the problems with the Fair Work Act, but there's just so many. We've obviously got wage theft. The Fair Work Act doesn't sufficiently deter or stop wage theft, and it's now been incorporated as a business model with more and more employers, including celebrity chefs, pizza chains, burger chains. We used to think it was just small businesses that did, you know, were a bit dodgy, but now we know large businesses like Domino's are integrating it into their business model. We've also got a problem with our laws, with our bargaining system. The way that enterprise bargaining works is broken, and it means that employers now have enormous power to unilaterally terminate collective agreements, enterprise agreements that were negotiated over many years, and throw their workforce back onto the minimum standards, the award standards. If your listeners remember Streets Ice Cream, that was one of the big disputes where Streets, one of the largest, owned by one of the largest companies in the world, was threatening its workforce with going back to the award, which would have been about a 40% pay cut for those workers. So the fact that that can happen, and the fact that workers can be forced into casualised work, insecure work, forced into ABNs and sham contracting, the growth of labour hire, the gig economy, demonstrates that the rules are broken and unions are fighting to fix the rules, to change the rules.
It must make you very angry when the government, you know, rushes into royal commissions to slam the union movement. Meanwhile, it dragged its feet on a royal commission into the banking industry, and it kind of just shows, I guess, its political bias, doesn't it?
That's right. It shows whose side they're on. I mean, if you look at a whole bunch of the front benches of the government, the ministers, a lot of them either were, like the Prime Minister, were former bankers themselves, or the Assistant Treasurer is a former banker, or they were lawyers that worked for big business.
So there's an inherent conflict of interest there, isn't there, between the government and the banking industry?
Well, I think it really shows. We saw yesterday Craig Laundy, who's the Workplace Relations Minister, and he described unions. This is the minister who's meant to be in charge, meant to be talk to all sides in workplace laws. And he described unions and workers as the opponents and begged the business community to run massive campaigns to entrench inequality, to stop job security and wage increases. So you're absolutely right. It does show their political bias. It's not something that we're shocked or surprised by. We've dealt with it for over 100 years, the demonisations, the attacks. And I suppose that's why we know in the end it's going to be a difficult struggle to change these rules. We're not under any illusions about it, but we know that we can win despite whatever they throw at us.
Alex, it's almost 30 years since the new Parliament House opened in Canberra. Of course, you're from Unions ACT, and I imagine there are some workers at Parliament House who aren't political staffers, who need much better conditions. What's the most pressing industrial condition for workers at Parliament House at the moment?
Well, there are, in fact, cleaners who still work at Parliament House that have been there right from the very first day that new Parliament House opened. And for the last couple of years, in fact, since the federal government, the current Liberal government, was elected, they actually abolished the very first thing that Eric Abetz, who was the Industrial Relations Minister, did was abolish a special set of regulations that ensure that cleaners who are employed at Commonwealth agencies and buildings got regular pay rises. So the cleaners at Parliament House, including cleaners that have worked there for 30 years, who've cleaned every Prime Minister's office since it's opened, have not had a pay rise since this Liberal government was elected. And in fact, they've opposed and stopped and hindered all of the attempts by the Cleaners Union, this United Voice, to ensure that the cleaners at Parliament House get treated with respect, have secure jobs. One of the things is that cleaners, the listeners might be aware, contract cleaning, there's contracts change all the time between the companies. And every couple of years, the cleaners have to reapply for their own jobs. And often they lose their leave, they lose their long service leave or sick leave or annual leave. So the federal government has blocked or stopped job security for those cleaners and also stopped them from getting a pay rise. And they've actually had a pay freeze since 2014.
Alex, people have been saying for some time that Parliament House in Canberra looks like a construction site. What health and safety issues does that present for workers there?
Well, the ACT is the most dangerous place in Australia to work if you're a construction worker. And we're the second most dangerous place to work for of any jurisdiction after Queensland. And that is because, unfortunately, in the ACT, we've got a very weak work safety regulator who believes that inspectors should spend 80%, 90% of their time educating and engaging with dodgy, unsafe employers rather than enforcing the law. So it's not just Parliament House. In fact, Parliament House, there's really, because of the presence of the politicians, the contractors behave a bit better when it comes to construction work. But a lot of the building sites in the Parliamentary Triangle, there's been accidents and there's been incidents where we've had trench collapses, wall collapses in construction sites in the Parliamentary Triangle. And the response by our work safety regulator, WorkSafe, has been just to give them a slap on the wrist and to ask them not to do it again, rather than enforce the law. And we're seeing that around Australia. It's not just the ACT where we've got weak regulators. The Fair Work Ombudsman is a classic example where they actually call the dodgy bosses who underpay workers, they actually call them clients. And their attitude to employers is to educate them about paying the minimum wage or providing pay slips, rather than saying, well, you've just underpaid your staff $20,000 or $60,000 and we're going to prosecute you or fine you. So that's a really big problem in Canberra. We've actually only got one Fair Work Ombudsman for 300,000 workers in Canberra. So there's a really big problem with safety, where construction work, retail, health and community services are the most dangerous places anywhere in Australia to work is in Canberra.
The government's been quite silent on that, haven't they? I mean, I imagine there's been some serious injuries that have happened at Parliament House, yet we've really heard very little from the government about that. You must be disappointed.
Well, I think the most serious injuries that we'd be getting at Parliament House would be quite serious bullying and harassment and mental health issues with the staff there. As I said, there's not been a great deal of physical injuries with the construction that we're aware of. But
the mental health issues are pretty huge, aren't they?
That's right. And you need to just look at how politicians treat each other in question time to imagine what it would like to be one of their staff or to be one of the non-political staff at the receiving end of some of that behaviour. So,
how responsible is the government for this bullying that's been happening? Do employers, for example, think that, you know, there's some tacit nod from the government that enables them to do it? Does the government kind of, you know, remain silent when it happens? Like, is the
government
complicit?
The government certainly does remain silent. The government certainly does remain silent. In fact, we had, talking about the construction industry for a moment, we had the ABCC, or the Building and Construction Commission, was in the Senate recently and was asked by one of the senators whether they were aware of any safety issues in the construction sector. Now, there have been over 30 fatalities in the construction sector, over 9 fatalities this year and over 30 last year in the construction sector. And the head of the Building and Construction Commission, which is a political agency created by the Liberal Party to attack the construction unions, said that she was not aware of any safety issues in the construction sector. So that gives you a taste of what this government thinks of worker safety. We also know that their agenda is to aid and abet worst behaviour of big business. And when it comes to bullying and harassment, sexual harassment, and also underpayments and wage theft, that is something that the government turns a willful blind eye too, because they want to support more profits at the expense of workers.
You must be concerned about the implications for workers if Peter Dutton does roll Malcolm Turnbull in the coming months before the federal election. Is that a pressing concern for the union movement in the ACT?
Well, we're no fan of Peter Dutton, but to be honest, the current Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, is basically doing the will of the hard right-wing ultra-conservative group.
Is that because he's scared for his job, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's clear that he's held hostage to the most extreme elements of the Liberal Party, and he has no personal agenda or politics or ideology that he's other than protecting his own job and becoming Prime Minister in the first place. And that's pretty clear when he jettisoned all his views about the Republic, or whether it's about he said that he wouldn't lead a party that denied the existence of climate change, and yet half his front bench don't believe that climate change is real. So, of course, Peter Dutton would be a very antagonistic Prime Minister towards working people and their rights, but we think that this government is on the very extreme end of that already, and it would be hard for Peter Dutton to do anything that Michaelia Cash and Craig Laundy aren't doing already.
Is the union movement anticipating a change of leadership federally?
Well, we're certainly preparing for a early election. We think that there could be an election any time from August this year until, obviously, the latest they could go would be next year. But we're gearing up. From our perspective, it doesn't matter who is the Prime Minister. We think that we deal with whoever is in power. But we're getting ready for an early election, that's for sure.
Are you confident you can work effectively with Bill Shorten should he become Prime Minister?
Well, I don't have a lot to do with Bill Shorten, and it's something that I leave up to Sally McManus and the ACTU and the various national unions. But we've certainly got a good relationship with the Labor government, Labor Greens government, I should say, in the ACT. And Bill Shorten's got a lot of policies that he's come out with that are very promising, that would do a great deal to turn around inequality. So, and he's obviously a former union official himself. He understands what working people have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. He was an organiser. He had to go out and talk face-to-face with workers in a range of different industries, convince them to take industrial action, convince them to join the union, and he knows what it's like. So we think we'd get a fairly fair hearing for him.
You wouldn't prefer Anthony Albanese as leader?
No.
Alex White, thank you so much for joining me today on 3CR. Much appreciated. Good luck with May Day in the ACT, and thank you so much for talking to us.
All right, thank you very much.
Alex White there from Unions ACT. It's 13 after 9 and you are on 3CR on our special May Day broadcast. Up real soon, I will be talking to Connor Burchard-Burns, who's the Women's and Health and Safety Officer at the Victorian Trades Hall Council, right after these announcements.
Y'all know how to kick it out.
Because as we know, the saying is, if we don't fight, we lose. If we don't fight, we lose. Whether we're talking about union issues, whether we're talking about civil and political rights issues, if we don't stand, if we don't fight, then we lose. And that's what it's about.
3CR, kicking against the pricks since 1976. And I guess I could.
The real way to commemorate these things is not just on the anniversary, but in the activities that you do every day of the year. What's important is certainly we should have a sense of history and of commemoration and of a degree of ritual. But the important thing is to keep them alive by reenacting them every day in all of our struggles.
You're listening to a Queer May Day special with James McKenzie. Here till 9:30, back at 10. We've got a full morning of May Day broadcasting here on CR. And on the line, I am joined by Connor Burchard-Burns. Connor is the Women's and Health and Safety Officer at the Victorian Trades Hall Council. Good morning, Connor.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm very well indeed. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Look, you've been doing consultations with the LGBTIQ community around workers' issues. What have trans and gender-diverse workers been telling you about the rights that need to be won for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So as the kind of the beginning of our work, we've been reaching out to our community to get them to tell us what kind of process that would work best for them to identify their key challenges as queer workers. And I guess I can't really speak specifically to particular results because we haven't had that many yet. But even just anecdotally, I suppose for trans and gender diverse workers, we're hearing a lot about things that are simple for other people and should be simple processes, like, you know, when you start a job, filling out your beginning of employment papers and just giving over your bank details so that you can get paid. And for me, that would be a simple process and that wouldn't cause me any particular stress at all. But for trans and gender diverse workers who might have their legal name on their papers, it can be a really traumatic experience. And we're hearing a lot about how common that seems a practice to be. And to be honest, it just doesn't have to be that way. It's such a simple fix. And what we're really focusing on is working with unions and with queer workers themselves to be able to completely fix those things. And that is such a simple thing that could be fixed to make sure that every workplace is safe and welcoming and accepting of all workers.
What are some of the biggest health and safety issues for queer workers, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. To be honest, there are just so many. And if I was gonna list them all, we would be on the phone all day.
But there must be some that are particularly pressing, yeah?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. So again, this is anecdotally because we haven't done our entire research project yet. But anecdotally, I reckon in terms of health and safety, bullying and harassment is huge. It's a huge, and it's particularly pressing, I think, for our community, because we all know that the effect of bullying and harassment in the workplace has a direct OHS effect on people's mental health, on their physical health as a result. And in our community, bullying and harassment at work for queer workers is a huge problem. It's prevalent. I expect, although I can't be certain, that is a huge thread of what we're going to see when we conduct our research project.
Do you think there was an increase in the amount of bullying and harassment towards queer workers during the marriage debate and campaign? And if so, has it improved since the marriage equality was won?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Oh, I would have to have a think about that. I reckon I wouldn't say that there was an increase, but of course, that is just my opinion. I would actually say that it stayed pretty constant. And if anything, and this is me being the optimist that I am, if anything, I think there was probably an increase in more supportive talk in the workplace and more support from colleagues, I would think, rather than an increase in bullying. But, of course, that's my workplace, completely different to a whole lot of other workplaces across Australia.
The union movement is at the forefront of social campaigns and often is light years ahead of employer organisations like the Victorian Employers Chamber of Commerce and Industry, for example, mm-hmm. VECI. How would you rate VECI's and other employer organisations' responses to LGBTI issues, particularly around gender diversity?
I can't speak exactly for VECI, but I will say that there are... So you're right, the union movement is very proud to be one of the spaces that are leading for queer workers, and we're determined to be better and get better in everything that we do. In terms of other employers, and particularly peak employer groups, I think what's happening is we're seeing a lot of... there's like a corporatisation of queer issues and LGBTIQA acceptance. And I think that that can be a good thing because it means that a lot of these like employer groups and a lot of like huge companies, Pride in Diversity, ACON's program, does a lot of work with big, big corporate employers around making their workplaces queer friendly. So I think that there is work being done there and it's really good work. But for us, it's about a whole organisation. At the floor all the way up.
And it's the big corporations we often hear about, like Qantas, you know, that are doing work with the LGBTI community, but it's the small businesses and the medium-sized ones that are probably the biggest worry for the community and the movement, aren't they?
Yes. For me, I would say so, yeah. So you're right. We hear a lot about Qantas. We hear a lot about the banks, you know, and the big kind of flashy organisations that have really well-funded pride networks. But I think the thing for us is that while those organisations might have a pride network and they might, you know, they might be putting some rainbow stickers on everything, there's not... Their workplaces might not actually be that safe for queer workers. And if there's nothing in those workplace agreements that are actually there designed to protect queer workers, then for me, the work hasn't even begun.
So to what extent then is the corporate response to LGBTI issues tokenistic?
I think it's definitely there to some extent. I think not all, but I think probably some of these corporate responses is more about PR. But having said that, it's not a terrible place to start. It's a better starting place than an organisation going, we want nothing to do with this. We are, you know, diametrically opposed to marriage equality, to queer acceptance. So I think even if it is tokenistic, I'm totally happy to have that as a starting block, build more depth from there.
It's wonderful the union movement's undertaking consultations and research with the LGBTIQ community and focusing on workplace issues and advocacy. What can we expect next insofar as your research is concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really excited about this in our team. So we are Union Pride, that's the name of our team. We are conducting a research project called Pride Chats, and it will be launched on Ida Hobbit this year, so May 17th. And the purpose of that chat is it's a exercise for us to collect data about the state of work for queer workers, but also really importantly, it's an organising process. So we have both an anonymous online survey, but also we have a facilitated organising conversation where we'll go out to organisations, to unions, and speak to workers about what their key challenges at work are, why those challenges keep happening and keep occurring, and what we can do as a collective to stand up and fight back against those challenges. So we have Pride Chats. We're really excited to roll that out really, really soon, actually. And then following on from that, we will be writing a resource for both employers and unions to use, and developing and running training. But that will be a little bit further off into the future.
Connor Burchard-Burns, happy May Day, and thank you so much for joining me today on 3CR.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Connor Burchard-Burns there. She's the Women's Officer and the Health and Safety Officer at the Victorian Trades Hall Council. It's 9:28. Up next, we've got Phil doing a special episode of Dirt Radio. I'll be back at 10 a.m. to talk more about May Day. And keep listening to 3CR all morning for our May Day coverage.
This is an important day because it's about standing up for workers' rights, for justice, for fairness. I don't care what colour someone's skin is, I don't care what language they speak, and I don't care where in the world they came from. Because we as workers have got to stand up for every worker having the right to justice and fairness. And every person that arrives in this country, no matter how they got here, no matter where they came from, having the right to be treated with respect.